You're listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas.
Hey, hey, welcome to The Crossover with me, Joe R. Lucas, brought to you by the Turkish Airlines EuroLeague. Throughout this season, this is where I'll bring you exclusive interviews with your favorite coaches, players, and legends. Each episode, I'll be getting down and dirty with some very special guests as I try to find out what life is like on and off the court for Europe's elite. Make sure to stay tuned in because no subject is out of bounds. Welcome back once again to The Crossover, and I'm your host, Joe R. Lucas, and today I get to sit down with a guy that is like a utility knife on the basketball court. If you need points, he can get them for you. If you need rebounds, he's up for the job. Assists, no problem at all. Obviously, steals, as he was named the EuroLeague Defensive Player of the Year in 2017. That's right, I'm sitting down with Adam Hanga. Welcome to The Crossover. It's Hanga? Hanga?
Yeah, it's... Hi, first of all, hi. It's the pronunciation, it's obviously in every country it's a little bit different. Right. In Hungary, we say Hanga.
Hango.
Yeah,
okay.
But here in Spain, for example, they say Hanga.
And so. I've also seen that it's Hango Adam in your country.
Yeah, exactly. We have reverse.
You go reverse, okay. Yeah, exactly. But we can call you Adam.
Yeah, Adam.
Adam. Okay, yes. Perfect. All right. Not sure if you noticed, I'm a little older than you. You probably never followed my career now. But I did actually.
You did? Yeah, I did.
I was never mentioned in a conversation for Defensive Player of the Year, that's for sure.
The funny thing is that if you look at my career and you ask my coaches back at the years, like 10, 12 years ago when I was playing in Hungary, they would tell you that this guy never played defense. I never played defense. I mean, I was still...
So you did follow me.
I was still getting some steals. I was still, like, you know, getting some blocks, obviously, right, because of my ability, but... But I was not playing actually defense. But once I get to Spain, and I remember after the very first game I played with Manresa, and the coach came to me and they said, Jaume Ponsarnau, and he told me that, Adam, very good, very nice, bravo, but where is the defense? Where's the defense? And obviously I realized that if I want to get some minutes and I want to, you know, improve my game, I have to start playing defense. So step by step, I think I improved a lot.
Beautiful. You jumped way ahead on my interview already, yeah. But that's a good answer. That's a good answer to start. One of the things, I mean, I don't know if it's an obvious question, and I probably should have asked you before we started this interview. You know who David Cornell is?
Of course.
I'm assuming,
of course,
right?
Of course I do.
I didn't need to ask you.
Maybe you played against him.
Okay. No, I didn't. No, I looked it up, and I never actually played against him. But, I mean, tell us who David Cornell is for the people who don't know.
Yeah, so he's the only Hungarian player who played in the NBA, so obviously he's a legend in Hungary. He has a basketball academy also in Hungary. Actually, in the city where I played in Hungary, in Székesfehérvár, in 6 years.
Oh, I can't wait to have to say that word. I've been dreading that one.
It's a little bit difficult, yeah. So obviously, yeah, he's a legend. He played in Spain. He played in Baskonia. He played in Gran Canaria. So obviously, he was the guy who us, you know, our my generation in Hungary, we looked up for him, and obviously we followed him, followed his career, and he was like an idol for us. So
he retired when you were around 19, I think.
He
retired in 2008. So you actually grew up with him.
Pretty much. Definitely, especially because I went to the city where he won like a couple of championships, you know, with the team in Hungary. So everybody knew his name, you know, everywhere when I went in the city, like, you know, everybody know him, and everybody.
Did
was
you want
like,
to be like him?
Obviously, the goal was to the NBA. I think now, these days, NBA is for everybody. For everybody, it's a dream. And then, you know, you get to know more basketball. You get more knowledge. And then, obviously, now, for example, I'm really glad that I'm playing EuroLeague. And I think it's a great competition. So obviously, he was an idol for not just me, but for the rest of the Hungarian basketball players.
He played for Tau. For the people who don't know Tau, it's Kirill Baskonia, Victoria Gasteiz now. You know, we have to say the whole thing. I mean, it almost looks like you followed in his footsteps a little bit, you know, going to the same team that he went to. And I'm sure Žalgiris wouldn't mind if you keep following in his footsteps. You wouldn't look bad in green.
Yeah, I think it was funny, and it was just actually it's really a coincidence. I don't think it was like we were trying to, or maybe like Baskonia followed me more because I was Hungarian stuff like this. And I don't know. I mean, just, you know, I was lucky to get the opportunity from Baskonia back, you know, like in 2000, I don't know, 11?
Was it 11? Whatever. Yeah, 11, yeah. I think I got my
after,
hotel. Yeah,
after 2 years of experience in ACB, and I, you know, I had a chance to sign for a EuroLeague team, and it was a great opportunity. But
when you're in Hungary, there's really not many people to look up to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You obviously had David Cornell, but there's nobody else for you to look up to. Where does the aspiration and the hope and to get to the level that you're at come from without any real role models?
Yeah, it just happened. I mean, I don't really had like role models. It was funny. Like all of a sudden, I just realized that, oh my God, I'm in Spain. Like, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm making money. And then it was just all of a sudden, just, you know, being a professional.
Did you play any other sports growing up?
Yeah, I mean, all the other sports when I was little, I played soccer, you know, swimming and all this. But
which one were you good at?
Everything, of course. No, but yeah, I stick with basketball. Like I play since I'm 6 years old, so, or 7 years old. So it's been a long time, and I don't know. It just like I said, I think it just happened so quick. You know, like everything.
It seems like it. It seems like everything.
It's like, you know, I had a 6 years career, let's say, in Hungary, which was like step by step. I was getting better, and like my last 2 years, I was actually dominating the league.
But hold on a second. Before that, are you able in Hungary? What's your accessibility to watch EuroLeague games,
nothing.
To watch
nothing? Zero. Zero. I mean, especially I'm from Budapest. So until I didn't move out from Budapest, I didn't even know that in Hungary exists professional basketball. So it was like...
There's no team in Budapest.
It was like, no, it's no team. It's no professional.
Really?
Now there is one in the first division, but let's say they're just there, but they're going to fall out again this year.
Right.
So it's not really like...
How old were you when you left Budapest?
I was 15. 15
okay.
when I left Budapest.
At that time you had no idea.
My agent told me, yeah, there's a professional team, first division team, but I didn't watch any like professional like basketball, you know. I was just it was just for fun. Like
no,
really for fun.
No Hungarian television exposure. Obviously no.
Yeah, we had I watched a couple games. We had another guy who he was my favorite player. His name is István Németh. He played a couple games in EuroLeague and he was my idol. He was like, I really liked how he was playing,
right.
But I didn't really like actually was like, oh my God, like once I want to be like a first division player, or like I want to be in that team, or like my favorite team, or like nothing like this. It was just really just the beginning. It was really just for fun, and because I really loved playing it, and you know, I said, okay, like my studies I can still do like in another city. I think it's an opportunity for me to grow up even a little bit earlier, like 15 years old. You're like moving out, you know, from home. It was
right.
the beginning was really difficult because I was still like not even a teenager. I was a kid. So it was difficult, but you know, it turned out well.
What about idols? You talked about this one guy from your country, but what about NBA idols? I've read that you like, you know, Michael Jordan's your favorite player, but obviously you didn't see him that often when you were growing.
Yeah, but I mean, the 98 final, I think I watched the 98 final.
The one
in Chicago.
Against Utah Jazz.
Yes,
right?
Yes, yeah. I did watch that.
Did he push off?
Yeah.
Did he push off in the last
yeah.
shot?
Yeah.
It's an offensive foul.
It's an
but
offensive
it's Michael.
Foul, but you have to give it to him. I mean, NBA, we watched a little bit. It was really difficult to catch NBA games because
right.
we didn't have a channel and you know, like maybe some pirate channels
right.
we can catch some something from Germany or something, you know.
Sky
so any other, yeah, like something like that. So DSF back in the day, it was DSF. So maybe we had a chance to catch some games, but you know, it was no internet back then, so it was it was more difficult. But my favorite player also, like, I think Allen Iverson. I think he was just such an influence.
He didn't play any defense,
but he was just such an influence on me. I don't know why, but I think just the swag, and I think how he just, you know, played the game. It felt like so easy. You know, he was just playing for fun.
Now, my perception is a little bit. I mean, I don't have much of a perception about Hungary, but I'm seeing you play now, and the stories that I've read and the stories that I've been told, and what I've understood is, you had to be the best player no matter where you went. Just about. I mean, were there? First of all, were clubs filled with kids? Were there a lot of kids playing basketball? Can you get a 5-on-5 running?
yeah. No, I mean, actually, I was lucky because when I played in Budapest in my team, I'm not gonna say the name because it doesn't really matter. It's a small team, still exists in Budapest, and actually, we had a really really good team. It's like our generation won everything. Like unders, 14, 15, 16, right. everything. We won everything. So I was, and it's still a couple of guys that still play in the first division in Hungary. So actually we have a really successful generation. And after moving to another city in Székesfehérvár, also I had like a privilege to play with really good players. A lot of them in the national team now, we still playing together. So right. we're still competing. So yeah, I mean, it's a different level, it's a different competition. But I think, to be honest, and I think we showed that with the national team in the last couple of years that our basketball is not as bad as people think. You know, it's not as low. I think we improved a lot. Obviously, we don't have 15, 20 EuroLeague players. But I think, I said, I think the last EuroBasket and now this qualification now
also. 2017, yeah. went to the yeah. top 16.
We went to top 16. The
first since, game we won since 1969.
Yes, since a long, long time. So it was like a historic win for us and a historic FIBA championship. So I think we are getting better. And I think the players also now we're believing more. Like it was right. back in the day, it was I think the problem was that we didn't even believe. Like we faced up against Serbia, like guys that we are watching in the TV.
And
like,
for you guys.
Yeah, and like I'm like, oh my god, we have to play against them. But now it's more like, yeah, I mean we are here to compete and we have to make here make them more difficult, you know, to play against us. And I think we believe, especially with the success of the last couple of years, so it's getting better.
What about your upbringing? It's well documented, of course, that your father left when you were 3 years old and left you and your mom together. I mean, when did you realize that was, obviously at 3 years old, you didn't know really what was going on, but when did it start to not affect you, but when did you realize what was actually going on?
Yeah, I mean, like growing up, each year was a question from my mom or from my family that, oh, where's my dad? When is he coming? And like, especially like my earlier ages, like we were still in contact. I mean, he was calling me a couple times and he was promising me to come and he will visit me, but it actually never happened. And basically that's it about my dad. So it's like we're still not in contact. I mean, when I signed with Barcelona, then he contacted me saying how much money I make and I should give him blah. So it's typical the bad story, I think.
He didn't contact you to say hello. Yeah, he contacted you, right?
Exactly. So it's I mean, let's say a sad story, but I feel lucky actually because my grandparents, I actually grew up with my grandparents, my grandfather and my grandmother, and they helped me so much. And maybe if my father is in my life, they're not as much in my life. And I can thank everything for my grandfather. He was the one who was taking me every day to practice, after work, before work. Even he was doing like 48 hours of work and then he was taking me to practice. So like he was a father. He was a father for me.
My next question is about not having a father figure in your life, but it sounds like you had that father figure.
He still is. He's big. He's big as you. He's big as you. He's strong.
Did he punish you?
Never. But we always had a fight after every game.
Did he play basketball?
He never played basketball, but he
knew what he was doing.
Yeah, of course. And he was always telling me, don't pass the ball, don't pass the ball. You shoot the ball, you shoot the ball. Why you pass the ball? He's like, you're not selfish enough. I'm like, come on, grandpa. I mean, it's a team basketball. So
with so little people to look up to, I guess, in Hungary, as far as I mean, look up to, but as on an athletic level. When did you start to believe this can take you somewhere, that this can be a way of living for you, not just a game?
Yeah, I think the changing point was when I changed my agent in 2010, I think, or 2009. I was still playing in Hungary, and obviously he's still my agent, one of my best friends too, and we made the decision together. It was my last year in contract in Hungary, and we made the decision that we have to get out of here.
Right.
Like, this is the time for you. You're 19, you're 20 years old. This is the time for you to get out from here, and let's see what happens, you know.
Right.
So we made the decision not just to get out, but to aim to Spain. That was the decision we made, that we have to play in Spain. We have to get to the first division team, And, you know, luckily I had a contract offer from Manresa. They gave me the opportunity. And after that year, again, it was crazy because after that I signed the contract. Then we finished the season. I went to Treviso to play
Don't jump ahead on me, man. Don't jump ahead on me. The other question I have for you, other than your mom and your grandparents and your grandfather, who was a part of your life that you just look back and like, man, thank God that we crossed paths, you know, because this person really helped me. I don't know if it's a coach, a teacher, whatever. Was there anybody, one person? Yeah.
I can't say one person. I think there is a lot of person who helped me, obviously, along the way. Even with studies, for example, I remember when I was still playing in Hungary. I was already playing in first division. I was 17 years old. You know, I had a little money, not a lot, but enough, in Hungary.
At 17, no matter what you're
In a small city, you know, I was by myself, living by myself. So obviously I let myself a little bit go, and I didn't really care about studying. And I think it was a big mistake. But luckily there was one guy who helped me, and he guided me back on the right path. And he told me, no, you have to finish the school. You have to finish. For example, that's a really good example.
But give him a shout out. Yeah. Who is he?
Istvan. Okay. Yeah. So obviously it was a big help. But then.
So you finished education.
I finished education. Obviously college. It was impossible for me after moving in and out, but you know, at least high school, I finished high school, and I think, you know, it would be a shame if I don't even finish high school.
Yeah. And you're not not just you, but Hungary in itself isn't the typical American format where you go to high school and you get recruited to go to college, and you go to college, you get recruited, you move on. So, I mean, there's so many more obstacles to get over. I mean, how many obstacles, or what were the main obstacles that you had to overcome to get out of? I'm not saying get out of Hungary like in a bad way, like it's a war country, but to get out of there to play basketball, it's not a basketball place.
Yeah, to get out, it was difficult because just like you said, there's not a lot of people before me who did this, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe, let's say 10 players who did this before me, and obviously not all of them succeeded. So it was a tough decision, especially I remember like my goodbye party. I was crying with my friends. Oh my God, you're going to go away. Like I went away forever, whatever. It's so funny, but thinking back now. But
and you're not that far away.
Yeah, I'm not that far away, and I'm going to come back in a couple of months. Right. So you know, we're going to see each other. But back, you know, like 10 years or 7 years ago, I was thinking that I didn't really speak any like languages, so it was like also like a problem for me, like a struggle, you know, like didn't speak Spanish, not as good as English, and you know, just to be in a different country, but I was lucky.
It's difficult.
Yeah, it was difficult, but I was lucky because back then it was not my wife, my girlfriend, but she came with me and she helped me a lot, obviously.
In 2006, you're at Albacomp until 2011. And in 2009, what you mentioned before was Treviso, the Adidas camp. You get invited to this, and you go there and play, and you play pretty well. Did you see this as like, man, this is it? This is my opportunity. This is my moment.
Yeah. So I went two times to Treviso. There was the first one in 2009.
Yeah.
So the first time I went, I had no idea where I'm going. I had no idea.
Who sent you there? Your agent?
My agent sent me, and he didn't give me any heads up. This what it is about, you know. I went there like, oh, yeah, let's play 5-on-5,
right.
You know, passing the ball, and like I was standing in a corner and I didn't get any ball. And I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. I remember like Nando De Colo was there, like a lot of players, Patty Mills, like good players, you know. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on here? And the first one actually didn't turn out really good, you know. I was there, but I didn't give my best. Obviously, everybody saw that my physical ability is really good. I can jump, he can run, he can a little bit shoot, whatever. But I didn't show what I can do. And obviously, the next one, I don't want to jump ahead again.
No.
But the second time I went, then I already changed my agent. So actually, we studied, you know, who's gonna be there, like what I have to do.
You went more prepared this time.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I went more prepared than. And the second time, it was really good, and I remember like I played really good. I played two or three games, and after the second game or the third game, my agent told me like, yeah, you have to stop
playing.
No more games. No more. We already have like.
You might
10,
play a bad one.
We
tomorrow.
Already have like 10 meetings. So no more games.
That happens. That happens sometimes. Don't drop that stock.
Yeah, no, right? It's fine now. It's not. It's tough.
I'm looking at it. It's like that. I mean, I read that you like rap music and R&B, and I was looking at the Eminem song. You know, you better lose yourself in the moment and don't blow this opportunity,
yeah, exactly,
man.
Exactly.
But they ranked you as the 6th best non-USA player, right, at the camp. And I don't think a lot of people would ask you this question, but I can because I played this game and I got a little bit more credit. You weren't happy with that, were you?
I didn't even know until you just told me.
Oh, really?
I didn't even know because I didn't really check. Back then, I didn't really check any like internet or like things like this. I was just in my own world. You know, I was still coming from Hungary. I was in my own world. I didn't really know a lot about European basketball.
Right.
So I didn't really like pay attention. The only thing I care about, I knew that I did good. And that was enough for me. You know, I felt like, okay, this time was different.
And then you saw, obviously, Mandresa was satisfied enough because somebody saw you there and they brought you in and signed you to a 2-year deal. And this is it. It's like you said before, man. Like, I'm going to Spain. With Mandresa, they were in the ACB at that time.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's not easy to get in, coming from where you're coming from, get into not only into Spain, but let alone get into the ACB right off the bat.
Yeah, for them, I think it was first maybe like an experiment, let's say. Like, you know, you're going to give them... I mean, Mandresa, obviously, they do this. They don't have the budget that any other teams.
Of course.
So they try to, you know, sign players that like coming from lower levels, but, you know, they have talent. And that year, actually, in Mandresa, we had an amazing season. We had an amazing team. I was so lucky that my first year out of Hungary, straight out of Hungary, I had such a good teammates and such a good team with such a good coach. They helped me so much, you know, to make it everything easier, you know, like my first year out. Because I it could have been like even like, you know, the opposite, like team.
Well, I mean, you know, I talk to a lot of American players and I always bring up the fact of adapting to, because I had to go through it as an American coming out here. And, you know, people say, well, he's from Hungary. It's not, you know, not that. Yeah, it's the same.
It's
the same thing. You know, it's a different language, a different culture. It's different food. You're without your family, which is number one. So, I mean, and Mandresa, I mean, is a nice little town, and it's close to Barcelona.
Close to Barcelona, yeah.
Which is, you know, which is every time you talk about Mandresa, it's like it's close to Barcelona.
It's close to Barcelona.
So, I mean, you were somewhat lucky. You had a good team.
We had a good team.
Successful.
We did good. We
an
did
incredible
really good.
Second year.
Yeah, we did. We did really good. You know, and we almost made the playoff my first year with Mandresa.
Mm-hmm.
Like we couldn't make it at the end, but I played with really good players. I learned a lot. I had like a mentor, Roman Montañez, who was just you know, like end of his career and like, you know, coming out of Hungary, I thought, oh, this old man is, you know, he's not going to, like, do nothing to
me. Hey, they're going
to
say that about you someday.
And look, no, but he was kicking my ass.
every day
on practice.
Experience,
you know, and, like, I was just coming out of Hungary. I thought I'm going to receive all the fouls, and, you know, I couldn't guard him. I couldn't score on him. So it was tough the first, but it was really good competition for me, and it was a perfect match for me in my first year.
How I saw some of your Spanish interviews. How quickly did you pick up Spanish?
I think in my third year. In my third year, I started to speak Spanish in Baskonia. Actually, they told me that, but we're going to do the interview in Spanish. And I'm like, but I don't really speak Spanish.
Right.
So like, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. Just try. And actually, because they forced me,
they
helped me because you know, step by step. And you know, that year I got injured. So I had a girl who, you know, she was working with me every day, and she only speaks Spanish.
There you go.
So I had to speak with her, you know, 7:24. So you know, step by step, I picked up. So like between the third and the fourth year.
They say the best thing to do when you go to another country is find a girl that only speaks that language.
Yeah.
But you were with the girlfriend at the time, so at least she was your trainer, right?
Yes, exactly.
So you go there for two years in 2011, just 2 weeks later, you're drafted by the Spurs, 59th pick overall. I mean, now you're the first person ever drafted out of Hungary to the NBA. You got one guy that played there, one guy that was drafted there.
Yeah.
He was never drafted. He was never drafted. So you're the first Hungarian player to be drafted in the NBA. I know as an American player, you grow up with that feel, that dream to hear your name. I mean, what was it like, man? What was it like? Were you watching? Where were you, first of all?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was. I did watch it. I mean, it was funny because I didn't. So that's the other thing. I never watched any NBA draft before. Right. So that was my first experience. And I had no idea this takes so long. I had no idea. So it started.
Hey, wait
like,
a minute. Well, hey, wait, wait. When I was drafted, there were 7 rounds.
Oh my.
And I was drafted in the 4th. Imagine. So it was like, it was agony.
So, you know, I started like, let's say 2 a.m. or like 1:30 a.m., something like this. Like, you know,
right,
like,
of course.
Yeah, like Hungarian time. So, you know, we started to watch with my friends, you know, a couple beers, you know, just hanging around. You know, I had a couple options with a couple teams. You know, they told me that, yeah, we're gonna pick you. Or,
but you had never went to any combines or any camps. Just it was just what they've seen.
Just Treviso. So we were watching, and it was like already 5 in the morning. So I was that tired. I was that tired, and I was like, and then I just received a message, and I play with Tony Crocker, who's in Kimki now, mm-hmm. and I play with him in Albacomp in Hungary. The year before, and he just texted me, "Welcome to Texas." I'm like, "What are you saying? What are you talking about?" And like, you know, obviously, like 2 minutes late because of
the internet
and everything. It's like, Adam,
way to ruin my surprise.
Yeah, I get drafted. So then, like, obviously, we are really, really, really happy and everything. And then I went straight to bed because it was so early in the morning. It was like 6 a.m. And the next day
I'm sure at like 9 o'clock they're bombarding you with phone calls and
it was crazy. I never had that many missed calls and messages in my life. I woke up, I had like 100 missed calls, 150 messages like all over the world. Everybody
so crazy. How's a kid in 2011? You're 22?
Yeah.
21, 22. Yeah. How's a kid, I don't care what time it is, after you get drafted, how do you go to sleep, man? I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Did you fall asleep?
The beer helped. I mean,
okay.
All the beers helped, let's say. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. After really like a couple, like the next couple days were really crazy in Hungary. Like all the media, everybody was, you know, about me. And you know, I really enjoyed it, obviously.
Of course, yeah.
I really enjoyed it. And
it's
I think the next day, or like in two days, I flew out to San Antonio, so I didn't really have a lot of time. You know, I flew out immediately, all the tests, like, you know, medical tests, and like, you know, just to, you know, say hi to the team. I was there for like 2-3 days, so you know, just meeting RC Buford, and like, you know, like all of a sudden, like, you know, playing in Hungary, and then like I'm in San Antonio.
They were amazing. Tim Duncan was there. Ginobili
I think they just won the championship.
They just won it that year. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
So it was crazy.
But you kind of knew that you were gonna be one of those draft and stash type guys, and
yeah. But
you go to Greg Popovich, who's a guy that counts on foreign players.
Of course, yeah.
I mean, loves foreign players. One of the pioneers in this.
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't really expect that San Antonio would draft me. Mm-hmm. Obviously, after they told me that, like, whatever happens, we would have picked you. You know, if nobody picks you, we would have picked you.
Right.
But I had other teams. I don't even remember now, but I had other teams. They were like, not 100% sure, but they were like, yeah, we're going to pick you. Don't worry about it. We're going to get you. You know, all this talk. And I didn't expect them, you know, to draft me, but, you know, obviously, I think
but,
I was
but
really...
But you did expect to get drafted?
No.
You
no.
didn't? Okay, no. So you had no real expectations
either.
No, I mean,
I didn't have, like, I said, okay, if I get drafted, it's okay. If not, you know, right. Life keeps going. I had a signed contract with Manresa already, so I mean, I didn't really change anything, you know.
Right, so your second year now, you go to Manresa, you've been drafted, obviously not playing with them, 11.7 points, 4.5 rebounds, too. I mean, like I said before, like a utility knife, man, you just do everything on the court. It's crazy. I love it. I love watching you play. And what other teams other than Baskonia come calling at that point? Was that Baskonia your number one option, or were there other teams that were knocking down your door?
I think it's a really good question. It's a really good question, but I think...
That's what
I
I'm think, here for. That's yeah, my job. Yeah. Hey, by the way, I heard you did a EuroLeague thing at halftime in the Barcelona game, the first Barcelona game with my man Andy West.
Yes, I did.
Don't try to come take my job. I'm telling you right now. I always check your age. I'm like, he's 29.
I just did what they told me.
All right.
So, yeah, that year, I think, if I think back now, Baskonia was the only team that offered me. And I tell you why. Because that year, Manresa, we didn't do good as a team. I started to play really good. I played a lot as a point guard, so I had a lot of, you know, time in the ball in my hand. Right. So
you're
played really
27
good.
27 minutes
yeah,
a game.
Yeah, so I played that. I played really good, especially the second half of the season. I played really good. The first part, not really. The second part, yes. But my knee started to hurt around February or March. So I think all the teams knew that I had this problem. And Baskonia was the only team that said, okay, we're going to give him a chance. And as you know, as soon as I signed the contract, we finished the season, I flew out to Baskonia and I did the surgery.
Right.
So Baskonia obviously took a huge risk with me because they didn't know how the surgery is going to turn out or how he's going to, you know, recover, whatever.
Is that the reason for the four-year contract? Because you still have to have the NBA somewhere in your mind at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm the kind of player and how my agents know me and, you know, how I think the people now, I always think in a long term. Right. I don't really like to think because, you know, I have family, kids, everything. Right. So I really always trying to think in the long term with the team. I'm not saying comfortable because I don't really like the word comfortable, because if somebody feels comfortable, it's not a good. But, you know, for my family to feel comfortable.
And it's more important. I say this about most players. And the thing is that to reach your potential, your maximum potential, it's hard to do it if you're going from one team to another team to another team to another country. Because you have to be within the system.
Agree.
You have to be with the same players and comfortable. And I think, I commend you on that, because a lot of people are like, well, I can make more money if I go here. I can make more if I go. And next thing you know, it's 1 year in Russia, 1 year in Germany, 1 year
here. I totally agree. I can't do that. I can't do that. That's what you can see. That's why my last year in Baskonia, that's what I felt like amazing. You know, I felt finally I was captain of the team and everything. So I felt like, you know, now this is my time.
Yeah, it's a huge honor to be captain of the team.
And if you just do one in 1 year, you know, then you don't have this feeling.
What do you think of the city when you got there? I played there for 3 years.
Actually, I love the city. Yeah, a lot of people say, no, we don't like it. I love the city. Yeah. I love the city. Maybe, you know,
it's the people, the feel
the
for
people,
basketball.
The people, it's really green. I love the food. I love the food. The only thing, of course, obviously, the weather. Maybe the weather, the only thing we can say, it's raining a lot, but I really like the city.
There's a lot of places you can go and play basketball where the weather's not that good.
Exactly.
And, you know, Victoria, I mean, they fill that arena up for 15,000 people, and they're the best fans.
Definitely.
Some of the best fans in all of Europe.
Definitely.
But this is your first walk now in the EuroLeague, in the, you know, big time.
Yeah.
Are you excited? Are you jacked up?
Really excited. But really tough year. Really tough year. Individually for me, personally, I was hurt and I started to play my first game. Actually, I think it was a EuroLeague game. I'm not sure. But we played home and you know, in December. Mid-December. So that was my first game of the season. And it was a tough year because I came back, but I didn't really, you know, play at the level I wanted to play. Obviously, the competition was again higher than before. The team were like, you know, like in the team, the competition was already like different.
Right.
I had to play against San Ameterio, who was, you know, at the time.
Yeah.
And it was not the same, you know, like coming out from a race.
Your minutes dropped.
You know, my minutes dropped.
Which, of course, when your minutes drop, your numbers drop.
Yes, exactly. So it was a really difficult year. Then I was in and out of injuries. I really refined myself, and it was a difficult, really difficult year.
Was there a moment where you thought, like, God, maybe I shouldn't have left Manresa?
No, I never really thought that, but I thought that it's gonna be tough. So like I was thinking, how can I get back to myself? You know, that was like my main goal. Like, how can I get back to myself? How can I be the same player again? I knew that it's gonna be hard to start to compete again coming out of an injury, just like this time now.
Right.
So it's always tough, but it was like mentally it was a tough year.
Sergio was your coach, right? Scariola,
yes.
The first year.
Yes.
And I spoke today a little bit with Fabian Coser, and he said you guys spent a lot of time on the bench watching practice together.
Because he was hurt too.
He had the kidney.
Yeah, he had the kidney issues. Yeah,
I can't believe you didn't listen to his podcast. It just came out a couple of weeks ago. I'm gonna let him know that you're not listening.
Yeah.
We talked all about that.
I'm gonna listen to him.
Yeah. He was great. He was that French accent, man.
I
was sitting across the table going, man, I don't know whether to give him a kiss or, you know,
I love him.
So, how hard is it? I know
I went through it, and I know a lot of players that go through it. It's just so hard to not play. It's just so hard to be hurt, and when you want to give it your all, especially this is your opportunity now to play in EuroLeague.
Yeah. It was, just like I said, it was really tough. A tough year. Even the team, we were like, you know, we're not as good as we were thinking, and individually it was really tough to, you know, playing from 30 minutes and dropping down to 15. And then, you know, like I was always, you know, people telling me that, you know, like, yeah, you're not as good as you thought, blah, blah, blah. So
people are cruel sometimes.
Yeah. So you know, it was really tough. It was tough, but
well, it had to be even tougher the next year when you get when you get on loan to
Avellino. I got loaned. Yeah,
what I mean. Yeah, in my mind, the couple things that I jotted down here is number one is like usually a player that's loaned is the young player that doesn't that they just can't find any time for you know, and they need to get him time somewhere else. And
it was
what was the first thing that goes through your mind when they sit you down? I don't know where they told you or your agent told you.
My agent told me the first thing that went through my mind. I was like, oh, it's gonna be, it's over, or I don't know. I was like, I felt really, really disappointed at the moment because
you have a 4-year
since,
deal.
Like since until that point, my career was just going up and up.
I wrote it here that you're climbing the ladder.
And I'm climbing the ladder, and now I fall, and I'm like, oh, so what now? Because I never experienced this situation. I never been in a situation like this. So what now? Like, how can I? What can I do? What I have to do? And you know. I still had they loaned me. I still had the contract with Baskonia, so we had to look for the team that, you know, suits me well.
Right. Were you married at this time? Was your girl with
you? Yes. I already had a kid. Yeah, I already
had a kid. You already had a kid. So that's another big blow.
Yeah.
So that's moving the family.
Yeah. And, you know, we had everything. We settled in Victoria whatever.
I mean, you set up camp in Victoria.
Yeah. So
four years. You're like, we buy our furniture. We get our house.
Car, everything, you know, so. So it was really, really tough on me, but
I don't want to be mean, right? But I want to be realistic. It's all about reality. And I went through the same thing like most players do. I mean, you feel like a failure to your family.
Yeah.
To your friend.
I felt like now it's you know something is wrong. So just like I said, it was really disappointed. I was really disappointed, and I didn't know what to do, but you know, talking with my agents and my family, the only thing we could do is just like, okay, so now try to find a team that suits me, that can, you know, like can help me.
Oh, so the team wasn't determined yet.
No.
They just came to you and said, hey, we're gonna loan you somewhere.
Yeah. So it was difficult.
You had no idea where you're going either at this point.
No.
Man.
Obviously, we preferred Spain.
Right, of course.
But in Spain, and back at the time, everybody thought I had a lot of knee problems. You know, the year I just said I was in and out of injury, so nobody really trusted in me, you know, to a smaller Spanish team, nobody wanted me.
Right.
So I'm like, oh, it's not good. That's not good.
Yeah, that's difficult.
And then all of a sudden, just Avellino just popped out, and you know, they told me, you know, they can take care of my contract, you know, so, and you know, we can sign immediately and just to go there. I was like,
so the Italian team, Avellino paid you for the year of your contract in Baskonia.
Yes, they did. So I was like, okay, it's not bad, you know, at least I'm getting paid. I'm getting paid, and this is the summer when I. Just like I said, I still had a lot of problem with my injury and my knee was not really well. And we had a lot of, you know, treatments we were trying to do in Vitoria and like any other cities, you know,
this is
the season ended. So before the season ended, during the year, we had a lot of shots in the knee, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, but nothing helped. So I told my agent,
what was it? If you don't mind,
I had a bruised bone. Okay. I had a bruised bone in my knee and it was just bothering me so much.
And we
couldn't find any, like, you know, like treatment that can help. Mm-hmm. And it's been like a long year now because I had the surgery, but I had the same problem before the surgery. So even the surgery didn't fix the problem. So it's been now 2 years with the same problem and we never fixed it. So that summer I told my agent, look, we have to find a solution. And obviously I looked up Kobe Bryant, Bryant doctor. So my agent find the contact, and we went to Germany, to Düsseldorf, to a doctor, and it was a tough meeting, I remember, because he told me that, so if you're not gonna like find a solution, for your knee, you have 75% chance that you're going to finish your career in 2 years. And I'm like, oh, shit.
Man. I mean, no player wants to hear that.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that. We're 26.
Well, we're in a – it's interesting because we're in a time where you see guys like Sergio Jewell who comes back from knee injury almost, you know, stronger than he was before. But there was a certain – there's always a certain negative connotation to the knee injury, you know, back in my day it was – You were blacklisted. I mean, that was it.
You were just about finished.
I mean, it was, you didn't have another chance. You had to start from ground zero and build back up again. And it's not like that now. But when a player hears that,
It was tough. But then, actually, I did the treatment there, and since then, almost every summer I go back there and I do the same treatment because it helped me.
What's your percentage now?
I don't know. We'll see. I'm getting older, so maybe my percentage is dropping too. But
these days, older guys get stronger.
Every year, something new is coming out, so never know. Maybe I'm gonna play until I'm 40.
But you went to Italy, you crushed it.
And that's the way you answered.
Your critics.
Yes. Yeah. I had a great year. I had, like, I think my first year when I was, it was really all around. Like, it was all around. I mean, I was playing 1, 2, 3, 4 position.
I gave you 10.6 points, 4.3 rebounds, 2.7 assists.
Yeah, so it was, like, really, like, all around. And I really enjoyed. And to be honest, I'm really glad that I had the opportunity to play 1 year in Italy. Just to get to know Italy. Right. The culture, the the food was amazing. Oh my God.
You're not like me, didn't go to Italy and gain weight, did you?
I can, unbelievable. Like, we were in Avellino, and so the mozzarella bufala is coming from there.
Yeah.
And I was eating.
So you're down south then?
Yeah, we were down south.
Near Caserta. I was in Caserta, same thing.
I was eating mozzarella bufala almost every day.
With the prosciutto.
It was unbelievable. So I
went to Italy to play for 4 months and gained like 12 kilos, I think.
It's unbelievable. Pasta, pizza. But it was a really good experience.
So, I mean, and I think that's the symbolic of kind of your fight out of Hungary. Not fight out of Hungary. Again, it was hard to get out of Hungary. But it's like you're resilient. You just keep coming back.
That was an answer.
You don't know what to do. And for anybody, kids that are listening to this, that I always try to like preach to kids, it's like, man, every opportunity is an open door, is a way to make an opportunity. Because you could have, like you said before, you could have went the other way with that.
Yes.
You could have just been totally destroyed, devastated, and be like, this is the end of my career. Got to Italy, scored two points a game.
Yeah.
And then you never come back.
Yeah, exactly. For sure.
Then you're done.
No, it was an extra motivation. Obviously, it was like a new competition for me, new league. So I even wanted to show, you know, everybody that, you know. And it, like from the first day, like at the first game I played, you know, friendly game with the team, I wanted to show, guys, you have to know, like, I'm coming from a EuroLeague team.
Right.
Like, I'm a EuroLeague player. You have to know that.
Respect.
Yes, so you have to know that. Even though I played, let's say, 7 games in EuroLeague.
Doesn't matter, man. You were there.
Doesn't matter, but I was there.
You were there.
But it was a really fun year with a lot of new experiences, a lot of new things in my life. It was really a fun year.
So now, I guess the analogy I'm going to use is we're going to stay on the ladder thing. So you going from Bascona to Italy, you lost a couple of those steps on the ladder. You know, you started dropping down. But you get back to Bascona and you have 2 great years.
Yes.
And some really good teams.
One of the best years. Yeah.
And now you've replaced those steps in the ladder and now you're starting to climb back up again. Are you starting to see the top again? At this point,
I hope not.
There's a great answer, but you're starting to see the light, anyways.
Yes,
got dark for a little while.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, like finishing this season, like in Italy, Bascogna called me back, and I played the playoff with them.
Right.
So because they had some problems, like they had a problem. I played like 4 games in the playoffs. So then, you know, the summer is coming, and then what now? So we didn't know Bascogna want me back, or they're gonna loan me again. So there was a word out.
That wasn't.
That was the word out. Was first that they want to loan me again. because they signed Bertans, you know, and we were full in my position actually. We signed Corbacho, we signed Jaka Blazic.
Oh yeah, signed, okay.
Yeah, so Perasso, which was a new coach, so yeah, we were just keep signing players, you know. But you know, I'm talking to my agent and I'm saying, yeah, well, now like I have to pack to go to Vitoria or what you want me to do? So we were looking for other teams. We were looking for other offers.
For the loan.
For the loan, yeah. Mm-hmm. But like last minute, Perasovic called me and they said, yeah, but you know what, Adam, I think I can use you. And I still remember for the call, he called me and he said, I can't guarantee you any minute, but you know, in defense, I think I can use you a little bit, but you know, I can't guarantee you a certain position, but you know, we need you. And that was still the funny thing is that was the year when I played 30 minutes per game and I played in every position.
You can't ever believe a coach, man.
so
I think the worst thing a coach can tell you is that you're going to play a lot of minutes.
Yeah.
So, and that's the year 2017, you come back, you win the Defensive Player of the Year award. I mean, one of my questions, you already answered it for me, was did you ever dream you were going to win a Defensive Player of the Year
award? No.
You already answered that one for me earlier.
That's why I was actually laughing. I'm like, oh my God, like this can happen. But it shows that you know, you can never give up and everything you want to, you know, you put your mind to it, you can reach, you can get it, but you just have to really, like, you're going to focus on it. And just like I said, when I get back to Baskonia, the coach told me, you have to play defense. I'm like, okay, if that's what I have to do to get some minutes, I'm going to play defense. I don't care about offense. If I score 2 points, but I'm very happy. So, but I'm going to play defense. Like, you know, this is my last game of my career.
I think those are the most important players on a team. The guys that are dedicated to do whatever they're asked to do. I mean, again, I go back to the utility thing. That's exactly what it is.
Obviously, I would love to score 20 points a game because everybody wants to score. It's fun.
You want to play, ultimately.
But I want to play. And I have to know what are my... you know, my best things, what can I do? What can I really do? How can I help my team? And I think, like, thinking back of my career, every team I played for and every team I played in, I think this is what I did good, let's say, that I always try to find the best way to help the team.
Right.
So that's, I think it's important for the player, especially at this level.
You're starting to sound like me that you're retired and stuff. You got a couple more years left, man. Don't worry
about
it.
A couple more.
And so now you're done in Baskonia. And I need to know, I need to be filled in what went on between June 28th and August 22nd, because you're staying with Baskonia, then you're going to Barcelona, and you're back to Baskonia, then you're in San Antonio, and I'm like, at one point, I'm like, I'm done reading about this guy.
Everybody was like, I'm tired of this guy.
Like, he's in the paper more than anybody, not too many players get into the paper between June and August, July and August.
And that's what I didn't want. I didn't want to be on the paper. So I didn't want to be the guy that always on the papers. But
it wasn't positive press either.
Yeah, and it was completely out of my hands. And it was so frustrating. And it was so many phone calls. It was so many meetings. I was so tired, to be honest. It was one of the worst periods of my life. Like, I was like, I can't believe. Thinking back, it was really exciting, obviously.
Right,
and
of course.
It was not bad. I said the bad word because it was not bad, but at the time it was so frustrating and it was so
when you
annoying.
Have choices, it's always a good thing. Yeah. But it was just coming out, like you said, it was totally out of my hands, but it didn't sound like that in the paper. It never read like that. Yeah. It read like, oh, well, he's doing this, he's doing that, this team's doing this.
So shortly, what really happened, just really shortly, I want to explain that when I played in my last year in Baskonia, like, in January or in February, they already offered me a contract. But I decided that I want to go to the NBA. That was my ultimate goal. I had a lot of meetings with San Antonio. And you know, I wanted to play in the NBA. I said, this is the year. If I'm not going now, probably I'm never going to go to the NBA. So I want to try out myself. You know, let's see what happens. But then at the end of the day, it didn't happen.
Right.
With different reasons. Doesn't really matter for the reasons, what kind of reasons, but it didn't happen.
I'm about to ask you that in a minute. Yeah. So.
So I was there. I was kind of saying goodbye from Vitoria. And in my mind, I'm already made the next step.
Right.
So in my mind, I didn't really want to go back, let's say, because I made up my mind that I have to move on. It's time to move on.
Like an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, it's time to move on now. And exactly. Now, okay, the goal was the NBA, But if not, then I have to look for some other challenges. Mm-hmm. That's what how I felt. And obviously, Barcelona was the only option, and I wanted the option. It was no question. It was no question. As soon as the offer came in, I was like, it's no question, guys. It's deal done.
So you, at that point, you forgot about San Antonio? Yeah,
yeah, I forget about San Antonio.
But
yeah.
It's been public that you said that they kind of mishandled things. Even you said they lied about some things. I mean, is that part of the reason why you're just done with it? Did that help you move away from it? Yeah. Or was that an issue for you?
To be honest, I understand, and even though now I even understand more how NBA works and how they handle things, but I have no hard feelings through San Antonio. The only thing I felt bad, and maybe I think I missaid the words, because the only thing it hurt me, let's say, that at the moment when they knew that it's not gonna happen or they're not gonna sign me, they didn't call me. So that was like, from my part, like before, it was the communication was super and extra, and like, you know, we were communicating, we were talking all the time, let's say week by week, day by day. And when, you know, things got worse, nobody called me, and they sent, you know, like from my agent in the States, a voicemail, and then he sent me the voicemail. So that was, I was like, come on, just call me, because I understand it's his business. Right. We have to know. Everybody knows this is business, and you know.
But
you know, you can just call me, and I think I'm a guy that I would understand. You know, I would say I would be still disappointed, but I would say, okay, let's say with due respect, I understand your decision.
Was this all going on during that June and August date also? So you're dealing with Basconi, you're dealing with Barcelona, San Antonio. And then what we talked about earlier, you're dealing with the Hungarian national team also.
Yes.
That you guys, that was your best year. So you're just, riding this crazy roller coaster.
I was trying to put a lot of pressure on everybody. That's why I was, I think, really annoying for my agents, because I wanted to play the European Championship.
Right.
And I couldn't play.
You had to have a place to be.
Yeah, I had to have a contract, because if I don't have a contract, and if I get hurt or something happens in the European Championship, then I lose everything.
Right.
So that's why I pushed them. Like, guys, we have to have a deal. We have to have a deal done, something, you know?
Would you have given up the European Championship if you didn't come to an agreement beforehand?
I mean, me personally, yes. But my agents probably dragged me down off the court and said,
and your
team, no, or my team. So I don't know. But for sure, I would have signed something. But I really wanted to play that European Championship. I was so excited about it, you know. You know, it's maybe once in a lifetime for us. So I was so excited, but everything was going on. It was really annoying,
but there's worse problems to have in life.
Of course, that's why my agent always told me there are worse. I know there are worse problems.
2 years ago, you were sent to Italy on loan by a team. These are good problems. You went Basconia, EuroLeague,
exactly.
Barcelona, one of the biggest and greatest clubs in the world. You know,
exactly.
It's like you're not having no one listening here on the crossover is feeling sorry for you right now.
Okay, I'm not looking for sorry. And after that. What happened after that, I don't really even understand, to be honest. This Tanteo, maybe people can even understand more than me. Right. So it's like,
I'm asking the wrong person.
Yeah, so I signed with Barca. They matched the offer. Then we had to agree with Barca in the buyout. So it was difficult. But you know, I think my agent did really good work. Mm-hmm. And I think at the end of the day, everybody got happy. I think. I just like I said, I have no hard feelings. Basconia gave me so much. And, you know, they helped me, you know, to get to EuroLeague. And I just said, you know, the final 4 years was amazing. You know, I had so many good memories. I met so many friends, and everything. So.
And now you're in one of the biggest clubs in the world, basically.
Which was a dream for me.
In Hungary, was that a dream? Did you know for Barcelona? Sure. Did you know Real Madrid?
That's the thing. Madrid and Barcelona, I think everybody knows. That's like the ultimate two teams where you are. Wherever you are in the world, you know these two teams. And, you know, since, you know, I got to Spain, it was kind of my dream. Like, I want to play in this team.
See, I was anti when I got here. I was like anti-Madrid and Barcelona. I was like, I wanted to always beat them, you know? I got in trouble because there was an article, whatever. And one time, long, long, long time ago, when I was in Victoria, I'm like, I hate Madrid and Barcelona, you know? That's all I want to do is beat them. It's interesting. I stalked you a little bit on Instagram this morning when I was doing all my work. I saw a picture with you with the king, as far as I'm concerned, Lionel Messi.
Yes.
I mean, my question is, Did you repost that? Was it Messi who took the picture with you and he put it in his Instagram?
So what happened is I ran to the field, like sprinted in. Other people were running into me, the security guards, to get me off the court. So I snapped a picture really quick. And it was like last year we won the Copa, so we had like a all team meeting, you know, on the field, and they were already warming up, so we were on the sideline. So they were already like, yeah, we have to get out. But, you know, a couple of us was like, no, we have to get a picture. So we were sprinting in, you know, in the middle of the court, and we took some pictures. So, and he was actually fun because he smiled too. So thanks.
There you go.
Thanks, Messi. Shout out to Messi.
Now, if I jumped in your phone right now and like picked up your phone contacts, who's the most famous person I'm going to find in there that we would all know?
Most famous? Whew.
You don't have Messi's number, do you?
Yeah, no, I do not.
You didn't have that much time.
I do not, but I'm going to get it.
You're going to get it?
I'm going to get it.
Now, you played the whole season in Barcelona, and it was a crazy year because, I mean, obviously it wasn't up to Barcelona's expectations the last couple of years, especially last year. They released Cito, Cito Alonso is there, and they bring in Pesic. And you guys go to the Kings Cup and...
bleeding from everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, how
do... That's what makes it so sweet, I think.
I've played this game for years, and I've watched it for years. How does this happen?
I don't know. I still don't know. I still don't know, and I think that's what makes it so sweet that we won that cup, because we were, bleeding, from everywhere, and, everybody was just feeling sorry for Barcelona. You know? Everybody was like, oh, my God, this team. Look at this team. Look at this team. Yeah, they are coming here to Copa. They're going to lose first game against Baskonia. We played Baskonia, where they were in amazing shape. And, I don't know, we just played our best basketball that year. It was amazing. The three games was just perfect games.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Did Coach Pesic coach one game in the league before? Did he?
Yes,
I think there was one game before
Bilbao.
Okay.
Yes.
So you did. He coached one game and then you went to the thing.
Yeah. He came seven days before. Seven. We had two plays.
Such a crazy.
We won the cup with two plays.
I was in Greece and I write articles for basketball games and stuff with the Salona, and I'm writing the article and I'm like, I can't believe it, just keep winning this. And even the Madrid game, you guys were actually winning by 20.
We were winning by 20, but the end we were like, oh my God, they were full court pressuring and we didn't know what to do. We would get so excited, you know, it was like 15 minutes left and we are up 20. Way too much time. Yeah.
And of course, I mean, in the end, that's the team you always wanted to beat. At this point, you've bled so much throughout the year, you didn't care who you were facing in the final.
It was such a nice feeling, especially for me. It was my first title, you know, my professional career here in Spain. So it was amazing.
How's that first title? What was the celebration like? Because not only is it a first title for you, it's the most unexpected title you could probably ever have.
I was just running up and down on the court when the game was over. I was just running up and down. I didn't know what to do. I was so happy, really. I was so happy, and it was still I remember, I was still sitting on the locker room, you know, interviews were over, everything, and I was just sitting. I'm like, really happened? This really happened?
that's exactly what I could imagine.
We won? How is it possible? But it was such a nice feeling, and you know, it was a really tough year, overall, obviously. Right. It was a tough year, especially EuroLeague, you know. Now it's 2 years in a row that Barca don't make the top 16, top 8. But you know, with this win, at least a little bit, we made it up. We made up a little bit for this Copa.
Now, at the end of the season, were you playing hurt at all? Because at the end of the season, you had the knee surgery done.
Yeah.
Again. So you were playing a little bit hurt.
Yeah. After the Copa in Kaunas, that was the game I got hurt first. Mm-hmm. I just felt like a pop, you know, in the knee, and I couldn't go back on the court. So I was out for a month or something, 4 weeks. But then I came back, you know. And then back then, we already knew that probably I needed surgery. But I said, okay, guys, why to do the surgery now? It's March, you know. I think the most important part of the season is coming now. I think I can handle this, you know, handle this situation. So we decided with the team that, you know, to try to play until the end. At the end of the day, I think it was a good decision for me because at least the end of the season, I think I could show a little bit how I can play, because I think I didn't really perform. Obviously, the Copa, I think I played really good, but like during the whole year, I didn't really perform on the level that I wanted to perform.
Right.
But at the end of the season, I think I showed a little bit of my character and I think how I can play.
As we sit here today, this will obviously be publicized later on, but we're at round 12 and you got the El Clasico tomorrow. We're not going to talk about that, but we're going to talk about the fact that you returned to action in round 5 and you've played little by little since then, but your numbers are gradually increasing, slowly, increasingly in a big way. I mean, your numbers are looking good over the last 3 games. You personally more comfortable now with the team and you're physically ready to go?
Yeah, I think first of all, I have to be physically always good. Mm-hmm. If I have any problem physically, for me, it's really tough to play. So step by step, I feel better. I would lie if I say that every day I feel good. I still have some days.
That's not going to happen no matter what.
I still have some days when it's, you know, a little bit tougher and you know, I have some pain or stuff like this. But you know, overall, I feel really good. You know, getting after coming back from an injury, I think it's always like you come back, you go really up, and then you drop a little bit. And that's the drop I'm afraid of. So.
You've come back from a couple of different injuries, and I always like to ask this. What's the most difficult part? Is it the mental part or the physical part?
I don't
think it's a 50-50. It depends on the player.
Yeah. I don't know. It's for me, for example, the second time, it was way much easier. Mm-hmm. Because I knew what to expect. Right. I knew exactly when I have to do what, when I have to come back. I never forced myself. I knew that, you know, like, this is the phase that I have to do this. This is the phase when I have to run. This is the phase when I have to walk.
Right.
So I never forced anything, you know. Actually, I always try to like take advantage of this situation. For example, now I went more to the lifting room, so we lifted more weight. Right, I went out to shoot a little bit more, you know, because every time, you know, in the summer I want to work on my game. Then
unfortunately, you're experienced in it.
Exactly. So I knew what to expect.
All right, let's get out the basketball story and let's finish up now.
Yeah.
Personal stuff, just a couple quick things. Wife Sandra, right?
Yes.
I mean, look at the smile. Yeah, you got 2 kids,
yeah.
2 beautiful girls. Sometimes I think a lot of people take for granted the sacrifices, and we touched on that with being alone to Italy and her being here with a young child. The sacrifices that women, our wives, have to make. It's an incredible career and it's a credible lifestyle, but it's extremely unstable. And you're one of the more stable guys.
Yes, you know? I am.
And you're still in stability.
Yeah, of course. She sacrified a lot, obviously.
Is she Hungarian?
She's Hungarian. And she's a lawyer, so she could have like a good career, obviously a decent career. Like, because when I moved out to Manresa, she had a job, so she was working with, you know, with the firm, and she had a pretty good job. But I told her that no, you have to, cut.
You didn't do that. He's making that cutthroat mark. No, you didn't do that. No, you're nicer.
I think now we are married, because after my second year, after my first year, you know, in the summer we got married. And I told her, you know, like, not once we are married now, I think we should, you know, really to be together, not like, you know, moving, like, you know, one weekend you're here, then the next weekend I'm trying to go home. So it was really tough. And
I mean, it's hard to be unstable in an unstable life.
Yes.
You know,
but she sacrificed a lot. But I mean, we should ask her one day. But I think she's really happy with, you know, especially now in Barcelona, they are super happy. Like, my family is so happy. They couldn't be in a better place, to be honest. Beautiful. So that's for me, it's a really important part, you know, because every time when there is a problem with the kids or sick or something, you know, it's the worst.
Ailey and Sasha.
Yes.
I'm not going to tell Sandra that you actually got a bigger smile on your face when I talked about the 2 girls.
they're the love of my life. They're the love of my life. Ailey, the older one, she's going to turn 5 in December. Mm-hmm. And the other one is 2. Sasha is 2, 5 and 2.
Man, 2 kids. They were both born in Victoria.
Yes.
Let me guess. This happened because you lost a couple games in a row and you couldn't leave the house, right? Because you know, Victoria, if you lose some games, right, you don't leave the house and go out to dinner. Yeah. So you were making babies during that time.
I mean, Ailey we made actually in Manresa because she born my first year. So,
but born in Victoria.
Yeah, but born in Victoria. Born in Victoria. Say so both of them born in Victoria.
All right, so I got one of them right then.
Yeah, one of them, right. One of them, yes. One of them, yes.
I see your face light up with them every time I see their name, and it's, you know, what's it like managing fatherhood, 5-year-old, 2-year-old, playing basketball, traveling? I mean, it's a strain, man. It's, you know, it's not easy.
Yeah, I always say, you know, when, for example, one of my teammates, they say, yeah, let's go out, you know, after the game or whatever, you know, and they say, yeah, okay, no problem. We go out, and then, you know, like, let's say 2-3 in the morning, I say, yeah, I'm going to go out. I'm going to go home now. You know,
that's
I'm out.
You just got done with dinner.
I'm out, you know, and then they say, hey, why you go out? And I'm like, why you go home? And I say, I go home because next morning, I have to wake up and I have to take my kids to school.
Exactly.
You're going to sleep until 2 p.m.
Exactly.
So,
you
know, so that's a couple.
You're one of those dads that gets up and takes the kids to school.
Yes.
Okay.
Not every day. This year, for example, like we have a nanny. She helps us a lot. Yeah. So like this year, the year that I can be a little bit lazy. Really, like I just realized that this year I get a little bit lazy and I take my kids a little bit less to school. But for example, in Victoria, every morning I took my kids to school. You know, and it's fun. It's a bonding, you know, too, with the kids, and it's really good.
Does the past and the fact of your dad left at an early age, does that have an impact on you as a father figure with your kids, or you just...
Yeah, for sure. On the way that I would never leave them. Yeah. I mean, I would never leave them. Whatever happens with the mother, you know, or whatever, like, I would never leave my kids, and I never, you know, like, not knowing about them, like, you know, day by day, what they do, how they live, and stuff like this, for sure.
Because there's two ways to go about that. You could have an incredible father figure as growing up and want to be like him, or you could have the exactly opposite. And you know, and either way is good, because
either way,
what you want to do is you want to be either that person that you knew or the person that you didn't want to know. And that's for your kids. Exactly. I think that's an amazing. Is there a boy on the way?
I mean,
you got two girls, man.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I wanted to go for the third one, but I'm afraid it's gonna be a girl again. So it's gonna be too many girls in the house.
I got three kids, one girl, man, and that's the one. Every time she, it's almost every podcast I do, I always have to talk because all you guys got girls, man.
I don't know. It's young, karma, as they say.
The young boys are gonna dominate in life in about 20 years.
I don't know,
now.
Yeah, but I wanna have a third kid for sure. But now I think this is the time for us to wait. Enjoy a little bit, yes, exactly.
But
now
the kids getting back into the diapers after a while.
Yeah,
it's hard, man.
That's why now, like the little one, she's just 2 years old. So in 1 or 2 years, she's gonna be better. And you know, we want to start traveling a little bit in the summer. You know, let's see, you know, other things to enjoy.
I spoke with Fabian a bunch, with a wife, with two kids. You want to travel? When the hell do you got time to play video games, man?
I tell you when. For example, the last 5 days I was by myself because my family went home, you know, before Christmas. So that was the 5 days.
Those were
when
the days.
I played. There was the days.
When she wasn't around.
My PlayStation was not even connected.
There you go.
I had to plug it in. I had to unbox it and plug it in. And then
I
played.
You're not playing that much anymore.
No, not anymore.
Right, so you're not coming home from a road trip and getting, good.
When my family's home, I never play PlayStation.
All the stuff I've liked about you now, I like that even more. Last couple of things. Hungarian gold medal that was awarded to you not too long ago, right?
Oof, it's really difficult to translate to English or any other languages. Yeah, it's like an honor pledge, let's say. And I really loved it because my grandfather could have went.
I read that. That had to be a really special thing.
And really special.
Because you couldn't be there, right?
I couldn't be there. Yeah, and it's a pretty big thing in Hungary.
How proud was he?
For sure, he was super proud. Yeah,
were there tears coming out of his eyes?
For sure.
What?
I don't know. I didn't see. I saw pictures. He was really like... He was really well dressed. I never seen him that well dressed for a long, long time. And for sure, he was so proud. He's so proud of me. And you know, just like I said, I can thank him so much. And you know, he's still like watching tapes when I was 12 years old. Like
he's
I was
still telling you what you did wrong.
I was home for like a week ago or 2 weeks ago in the break. And you know, he still have like a little cassette VHS, you know, and he's still watching the tapes, the same tapes over and over again. So it's an amazing guy.
29, it's never too early to ask this question for me, because I learned somewhat the hard way and I wasn't prepared for retirement. You know, and do you have anything going on? Do you have any thought process? You know, stay in Spain, go back to Hungary, businesses. You have anything in your mind that will kind of make that what I call AB after basketball,
yeah,
an easier transition?
Yeah, hopefully I can play a couple more years. Hopefully.
Well, no, you're going to play
hopefully,
a couple more years.
Hopefully. 29. Hopefully, yes.
I'm talking about after that, when you hang them
after
up.
After that, for sure we're going to go back to live in Hungary.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. I'm not say 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that we're going to go back to Hungary just because of my wife, because I think she will start to work, you know, mm-hmm. As a lawyer. And you know, I think for her it's easier to work in Hungary. And, you know, just to enjoy. Basically, I want to enjoy life. Obviously, I have a lot of thoughts about what to do after basketball. I want to stick with basketball, obviously.
Stay. Don't come take my job, man. Don't come take my job.
I'm thinking about EuroLeague. You know, I'm already talking to EuroLeague. You know, I have a couple.
I got Kyle Hines on my back. I got all you guys coming after me, man.
And, you know, to really enjoy life, you know, trying to, you know, build something, you know, in Hungary, obviously try to give back to the kids. I want to, you know, help them, you know, to make what I did, you know, in my career. So obviously there is talent also in Hungary. We just have to find it and we just have to help them. So
my quickest advice that I could give you is do it now.
No, no.
Do it now. Start now. It's never too early to start, and it's always too late to start when you're done. That was a big mistake I made, and that's one thing that I can personally tell you as an never old 53-year-old man, do it. If you can do it now because you got the time, you got the money, you got the resources, and you can get it
you're
done.
Right.
So don't wait too long and get
you're
it
right.
done.
I have a camp. Like every summer I have a camp for kids, and you know, we're trying to give back something, but it's just so short, you know, and it's I wanted to make it so much, you know, like longer, a week or like 2 weeks, and it's like 3 days. So hopefully, you know, in the future, there you know, go. I can figure it out.
Look, man, it's been an absolute pleasure for me.
Me too, man. Me too.
A story about a kid that the odds are just like totally stacked up against him. Come of a country where there's no idols, there's no one, basketball history, nothing to achieve. To me, it's eye-opening and amazing. I wish you continued success on your journey.
Thank you.
Get that knee 100% Betty, man. Play until you're 40. And I just want to thank you for your time here today on the crossover, man. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you, bro. Thanks, man. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Crossover with Joe R. Lucas. If you like what you've heard, subscribe now so you don't miss an episode and leave us a review on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You can also get in touch via Twitter and Instagram at EuroLeague using the hashtag ELCrossover or on Facebook at the EuroLeague.